Welcome to Kadan, the Small Steps podcast, where we try to showcase individual perspectives of recent graduates about different pathways of life. I am Arjit Singh.
And I'm Hemant Shpatia.
And together, we will try to uncover what it means to have a traditional career. Thank you to everybody who has been listening to us and has been giving us feedback for the past few episodes.
We are listening to all of you very carefully and hope to produce even better episodes from now on. For now, we are very excited to bring on a guest today. So, let's start the show. Our guest today started off with English honors, but dropped out midway to then pursue her love for the Japanese language. Since pursuing that, she has not just studied Japanese herself, but taught it to others. She also worked in sales at a business processing outsourcing firm, where she talked with Japanese clients. She believes to have been happiest when she broke out of a loop of toxic patterns and understood the importance of her mental health. She also practices witchcraft, something we are eager to get into. But before that, let's welcome our guest, Brinda Batra.
Hi.
Okay. Hi, Brinda.
Hi, Brinda.
Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we hope we've given the audience a little something to stick around because we believe this is going to be a very exciting episode. We are very excited to have you on because, you know, we think that we're going to be able to prove or, you know, just even get a little or get a step closer to proving that a traditional career is pretty much a hoax. So I'm going to let Hemant ask you the first question and we'll go from there.
All right.
So, you know, coming from a commerce with multimedia and web tech background, why did you choose to study English honors?
I honestly have been very bad with numbers, especially. So I did not really have any other option that I could get into. BBA and BCom, you know, they're all numbers. Accountancy, economics, mathematics. So that's something I cannot really do. So I needed a degree, of course. So the only option I was left with was English honors. And yes, I went for it.
Yes, you wanted a degree, but then you switched and kind of dropped out of that. Could you maybe give us a little bit of an understanding of what happened there? Why you chose to not completely go for it? Or was there something that in your mind where you were like, okay, you know, if I do this, it's probably going to get me to a different path. And what was going on?
Okay, so right after my school, right after my grade 12, I was pretty sure that I wanted to do something related to language. So I had German back in school. I, in fact, almost filled up a form for German, you know, as in to pursue it as my master, like a specialty. But I don't know what happened. And this cousin of mine, she's always been studying Japanese. It's been like 20 plus years. So she guided me further for it. She's like, you know, Indian economy is, you know, really getting into Japan and they're sort of having a good connectivity right now. They're in the Japanese relations. So like, yeah, sure. Why not? Let's give Japanese a try. So I knew I wanted to get into language, but I think we all know, you know, there's nothing without a degree that you can actually work someplace. So I needed a degree. So just for the sake of it, okay, I thought let's do English honors. But I had no idea what the syllabus exactly was. So it was all novels and all, you know, really old writings, which I could not do. It wasn't my forte. I tried to get through the first year, but I somehow could not clear all of my exams. I went into second year. I failed. I really legitimately failed my second year. So I was really scared, you know, how is my family going to react? So I went up to my dad and he was really pissed. I had to repeat the year. But during like this duration, my dad went with me to a Japanese firm. So the guy there, the person who handles the company, is my dad's friend. So I spoke to him in Japanese and he really complimented me. And my dad was really proud, you know, at that moment, because what the person said was like, I haven't heard anybody speak Japanese like she's speaking in India. So I was really happy. And that, you know, sort of made my dad relax. Again, the year I repeated, my results came out, English honors, I failed again. So that was a drastic change in my dad's reaction where he did not really get mad at me because he knew that I am focusing on my language. So I decided to drop out of English honors then because I knew that no matter how much I keep trying to do it, it won't happen because it's not my interest. So I've just been focusing on the language since then.
I think that's something that rarely happens with at least an Indian household, from what I've heard.
I did not expect my dad to be so cool.
So that's awesome. That's great.
You know, I think Arjit too, we are trilingual. We know Hindi, English, and Punjabi. And
I know a little bit of German as well. So
yeah, so he knows a bit of German, and you do too. So Hindi, English, German, and now Japanese. Safe to say, you're a polyglot. So how hard was it for you adding Japanese, one of the hardest languages in the world, to your repertoire?
Initially, I did not know that it's going to be so difficult. I was just very intrigued that, ooh, a new language, let's go for it. So I started, and I was learning it from two places simultaneously. One was an Indian teacher, and the other was a native Japanese. Neither of them started teaching me, you know, like, they would not guide me in Hindi or English. They just would not use a third language to help me understand Japanese. It all started in Japanese, and I feel that was a really good suit for me because it made my base. I do not have to think in another language to start thinking in Japanese then. So I think I did pretty good as far as where my scores are considered or where I am right now. I think I did pretty good. And I'm really happy. It's the second most difficult language in the world, yes.
That's awesome. That's so great. You know, it reminds me of my teachers back when I was studying German in Auburn. And, you know, I took it for two semesters. And, you know, since then, I've just been doing it on my own. But the first teacher, I think, did not do that as much. So did not really, like, talk in German, just in German. Like, he would use a lot of the English, and just to, like, kind of help us with that. But then the second one was more of like, okay, she would just say things and you were just expected to know them, which was in sense a little bit harder, but I think it worked a little bit better just because, you know, you start picking that up and it does take a little bit longer, but then, you know, you're expected to do that homework and then and be ready for that. And of course she wasn't using anything that was going to be too hard, but definitely something that makes you, you know, understand that, yeah, you know, it is going to be difficult, but I'm ready for it. So it was a great time. And so that's very interesting that you mentioned that. Mm-hmm. Going off of that, I think, you know, now that you are studying Japanese and, you know, not really focusing on anything else, and you've been in this for how long now?
Almost 4 years.
Okay. So, you know, it's a good time to ask you whether there are enough opportunities at least available in India or wherever you've been looking, like what kind of jobs are available in the industry, you know, and how do you get along with the industry? You know, so like what all is going on? How do you find those positions? How do you get to those? And how do you settle in that?
As of now, the majority for jobs in the sector of language are they're all BPOs, you know. Sales for BPOs, they're all call centers, nothing besides that, like 80% at least. Not just Japanese, they're also looking for German, French, etc., but they're all BPOs. So there are also, like the sector I am working in right now is a hospitality sector. So what we do basically is we provide serviced apartments to people, okay? So there's like a lot of Japanese companies in India right now, say Maruti, say Honda. So, you know, those native Japanese people come here for work, and they need a place to live in. So what we do is we provide them apartments. They stay there, you know, 8 months, a year or so like that. But as far as I know, there's a limit to the language in India. That's basically sales and call centers. And as far as you can get is an automobile company and technical support, basically. That's all I can think of.
Huh. So, okay. So, you know, getting into, as you mentioned, you didn't even know how hard this language was going to be. So did you know about the career before you even started studying Japanese? Did you have anything in your mind, or was it just something that you just wanted to do and just wanted to get into, and it was just out of love?
At that moment, I was aware that Indo-Japanese connections are going to get better and there's going to be good business, but I wasn't really still, you know, very decisive that what exactly do I want to get into, what field. So I was like, okay, let's just do the language and we'll see later on, you know, what field am I suitable for? So I just went for it.
Great. I mean, I've heard like with languages that, you know, people of course like want to travel to the country and just immerse themselves into the culture mm-hmm. and into, again, you know, a place yeah. where people are not speaking any other language. So you're kind of forced to learn that. Did you ever mm-hmm. think of that? Have you ever been to right. Japan? Do you plan to go in the future? And where do you see yourself taking the language?
I have always wanted to go to Japan. In fact, I even planned on doing my graduation from Japan, you know, after dropping out of English honors and still pursuing the language. So I was like, okay, why not give it another shot, go to Japan, you know, just master myself in the language and do something alongside. But it hasn't really, you know, the plan hasn't really worked out yet, but I really want to go to Japan. It's a beautiful place. And it's actually, you know, like the place where I'm working in right now, we have to deal with, you know, the Japanese people. The language sort of comes naturally. Those Japanese don't really know English. So, you know, I am forced to actually speak to them in the language. So that really helps me. There are times when I'm stuck and I obviously do not understand all of the words that he uses, you know. So that helps me learn better, actually.
Okay.
So if you did go to Japan, like, do you have something in mind of what you want to do? Or is it something... Yeah, do you want to just explore, you know, what the culture is all about there? What's going on with you? What's your mindset?
Like, because, you know, like now that you know the language a little bit, and initially that was your plan, right? So initially you wanted to go there and maybe immerse mm-hmm. into the language and study a little bit of that. Of course, you know, you're still going to be learning that. Like you said, you know, you don't understand some of those words, mm-hmm. But like, what do you intend to do when you go now? Like, do you intend to maybe like study something particular, or do you think that, you know, you're just going to go out and then explore that?
Is it just a travel thing, or do you want to live there? Something like that.
Yeah. I haven't really thought that far, but I did have, you know, this idea of living in Japan once, but one of my friends lived there for some time and she advised me that, you know, work culture in Japan, it's really hard. Just avoid yeah. staying there. You can go there for a visit or a good vacation. Don't stay there for work purpose. I was like, okay. So since then, you know, I've sort of diverted my routes. And if I ever actually go, you know, get to go to Japan, I would love to get to know the culture more, because it's actually a lot like Hindu culture, a lot like Indian culture, if I may. But it's really beautiful, and they're actually one of the kindest people you might come across. Japanese.
Yeah, you know, as you mentioned, the work-life balance in Japan. I've read mm-hmm. it's like they're working for like 11 to 12 hours a day. It's pretty common there to work that long. But yeah. working in India with Japanese companies still, what's the work-life balance for you right now?
So the company that I'm working with right now is not a Japanese company. It's an Indian company, but say 80-90% of our clientele is Japanese. So that goes according to the Indian schedules. But of course, Japanese like need their work done in the spur of the moment. So there are days when even Sundays aren't really an off for me, because I work in the guest relations team. So, you know, any complaint or any issue that the guest is facing, we need to have it resolved. So it can be like a midnight call that a guest is facing issue and we need to work at it. So I'm like working 24/7 basically.
Yeah. So, I mean, and, you know, I bet that the pandemic has done a little bit more to that, right? So I've heard that people used to just go to the office, you know, work 9 to 5. I mean, that's definitely broken down a little bit more now, you know, now that people, right. you know, are pretty much either living on their own schedules and it's become more of a deadline based thing than a time-based thing. I think that definitely kind of plays into right. what you are doing now, right? So would you like to talk about that a little bit and how that has changed from before?
It has actually been like a complete turnover. You know, when I used to go to office, I knew that, you know, I get my lunch break, I get my fixed working hours, and if I'm out of the office, you know, just like a natural washroom break, yes, nobody's going to disturb me, okay? Because they know I'm out of the office. So here, when I'm home, okay, I'm taking a shower, I'm getting a call, I need to answer it, it's my boss. You know, I'm sitting, I sit for lunch, I'm getting a call, I need to answer, I can't just say, okay, I'm sitting for lunch, because he does not know and he does not care for that. So it's been really messed up, actually. The sleep cycles, especially, you know, you're like, okay, it's chill. The office starts at 10. I can wake up by 8:50, but then I'm just lazing around in bed, receiving the calls, doing my email work. But then, like, I tend to doze off midday and it sort of messes up.
Yo, it seems like it's quite complicated right now, your work-life balance again. But do you have any regrets, or if, like, it's a question that we ask a lot of people here, and it's something that, you know, really tells us about the other person's psyche. If you had the chance to go back and do some things differently, what would those things be for you?
Either that, or you can also take it as something that you did and you would like to do that more of, right? So if you did something that you really like, would you do that more, or would you change that and maybe allot your time to different things that you haven't been doing maybe?
Okay, so that's sort of conflicted for me. I really love sports, and back in school, if I go back there, I was in the school basketball team. I was the captain, and that was one thing that made me really happy. Okay, I love sports even until today. So due to some reasons, I had to quit back in grade 11, I think. And after that, I met with an accident. My knee was messed up, so I couldn't really run again, like as much as I would require for a sport. But if I could go back, and I would not quit my gaming. Like, I would definitely not quit basketball, at least, because that is one thing that genuinely brings me happiness. Besides that, if I think, there's nothing that I regret, because my dad actually sometimes say, even if I'm looking forward for my master's degree or my undergrad, like if I have to start again, start over, he sort of comes up saying randomly, you know, that if you would have studied those 3 years in a proper way for English honors, you wouldn't have to face the situation you're in today. And I'm like, Dad, I am fine. I am not regretting it. I am, like, happy where I am today. So no, I don't regret anything. I am very content with what I am right now, what I have right now.
That's great. That's great. And you talk about basketball, let's say, as a hobby as well, you know? And so I'm sure you still maybe hoop around a little bit whenever you get a chance, if you see a basket, if you get a ball or whatever it is, you know. But you do also have a couple other, like, unconventional, if you may, things that you do. And so you mentioned witchcraft, right, and spirituality. And that's something that you really, I mean, got into. But also, I think, as of what I know, it helped you kind of get through a couple of those different things that were happening in life, right? So. What do you maybe want to talk about that, and what do you do with that?
Okay, so it was, I think, maybe 3 or 4 years back, I wasn't really in a good mental state after all of this college thing. And then I had a rough breakup phase, you know, the usual cliche teenage things, but I had to get out of it in some way. And I found a way, like, I got into meditation initially. And then it sort of guided me to search new things and discover what spirituality basically is. You know, you need to get off the religion side and you need to look to the bigger picture. So initially, after, like, say, maybe a year and a half, I started learning new things. And I learned about crystals, and I learned about, that's where it came from, witchcraft. And according to people, like, you use the word unconventional, people really have a bad image for witchcraft, okay? So it is not bad. That's satanistic shit that's bad, okay? Witchcraft is not bad. It helps you do good. It's not just, you know, spell casting. Witchcraft is also learning about yourself, doing the basic shadow work, going inside, you know, healing. It's all of that. Yes, you cast spells, of course you do, but they're also good spells. There's a difference between a spell and a curse. No. Yes, if I want to do some harm to you, I can cast a curse, but I wouldn't. So I'm basically, like, still learning. I am on the very, you know, of it. There's a lot of research required in it. You can't just jump into spell casting. You really need to know the basics. So it really helps me get out of the normal day-to-day, you know, life. And that's something that's really intriguing. I love reading about crystals. I love buying crystals for myself. And they help me heal as well. So yes, that's a whole vast topic to talk about.
Hey, we love to get into it.
Yeah, we can talk about this, you know, after the call. So Yeah, that's something we can get into. I guess we've got the time. As Arjun mentioned, the witchcraft really helped you with, you know, your personal life, your social life as well. So other than just that aspect, like, what are your biggest achievements according to you? And not just in the career, but also your personal life. And does this witchcraft or any other hobby play a role in that?
It depends how we actually classify achievements as, you know, do they have to be medals? Do they have to be trophies? But if I talk about achievements for myself, I wouldn't really base them on that. Yes, I do have those typical trophy achievements that to categorize specifically in sports. But if I have to talk about that now, I will think about coming over a specific phase of my life was a very big achievement for me. I have been in really, you know, darker situations or darker days I've seen, and I've made it through that. And I think that's one of my biggest achievements for me. I've had a bad, you know, series of anxiety attacks, panic attacks. And I think what I've come out of has really made me who I am today. And in a bigger picture, if you see, I like to call myself as a healer or a light worker maybe. And what I think, you know, if I come across people, I feel the urge to, you know, give them lots of love and heal them in any possible way that I can.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. You know, it's been, I think it's getting to a place where it's a lot of people's mindset is to not just work for them, but help others in whatever way they can, right? And that's very, very nice of you to, of course, think of other people as well, whether that is in a way that they think is unconventional or doesn't work for them or whatever it is. And I'm sure, you know, I'm sure that there's people that you do that for and then they say something and you're like, you know, maybe I shouldn't have done that or whatever it is. And whether that is family or whatever, I'm sure there's backlashes, of course, you know, that make you maybe not even feel as good about what you're doing. But as long as you're happy with that, I think that's what matters most. So,
oh yeah, there's been like so many times, you know, when you're actually genuinely being nice to someone or kind to someone and they in turn, you know, just turn out to be real rude. And then you're like, excuse me, I was being really nice to you and not just for the sake of it, but that's who I am. And then there's times I feel like, no, you gotta be, you know, you really have to stop being so nice to everybody. And then I realized that's not me. I am actually nice. That's how I will be. I don't have to change it.
Yeah, you know, and we'll keep sending memes to each other to continue being nice to each other, of course. So that's definitely part of being nice, I think, is sharing that laughter.
So talking about positivity, I can see that you have a rice tattoo on your wrist. So how important is that tattoo to you? And like, I mean, most of the listeners, you know, are listening to this podcast and not watching it on YouTube. We are on YouTube. But like, can you describe that tattoo and like, how important was it and what kind of a role that plays for you? What does that remind you of?
You know, I have two tattoos actually. One is Shantihi and it's Rise. So they're both for different situations for whenever I am in. There are times when I feel like I'm sinking down and, you know, there's nothing that I, you know, even if I do something, it's not going to get me up. But I have been in worse situations and I know that no matter what situation I am in, I can rise above that. So hence Rise.
That's awesome. Okay, so I think it's incredible that people go against what other people's views are, or whether that's their own parents,
and that's do things. On, basically.
Yeah, yeah, and do things that you have been doing, right? So whether that is witchcraft, whether that is getting tattoos, which today is a very normal thing in most of the world, but I know being in the U.S. too, in parts of the U.S., they're still looked down upon, right? It's a thing that not everybody can do, because they have to go against one or two, if not more people, to do that. And so it's very important for us, at least as a community, to push that. And I'm glad that you are doing that. And I hope that some of our listeners also kind of get to do that. Because I think if they get that little bit of power to push through, I think that's the lesson for today, maybe, you know, is doing something that really makes you happy, really makes you, you know, push through those boundaries that people have set for you and go out into the world and explore different things without having to worry about what the society is going to think and what the norms are.
So, you know how brown families are, right? Like Indian parents, especially. So my dad's always been against my tattoos. Like I got one, I got two, and then like, we're not getting any more of them from that. You get it? I'm like, Dad, that's one thing that gives me happiness and you cannot stop me from that. So this is one topic that my dad and I always argue upon. I have like quite a lot of tattoos just besides these. So there was this one time he did not even know that I got a tattoo and he got to see it after like a month and he did not speak to me. But of course I did not stop getting tattoos because they really make me happy. So sometimes you have to push beyond, you know, what your family also says, because yes, they look out for you. They have that old thinking that, you know, no, tattoos are bad, but it gives you happiness. You go for it. Like, you know who you are.
I guess that's a very good point to end our show for today. Be yourself. Yeah, that's great. And Vrinda, can you let the listeners know where they can find you?
You can always connect with me on my Instagram. My handle is, okay, so I sort of stole Arjit's handle idea. So this is too Arjit to quit, and my handle is too Vrinda to quit. So the credits go to Arjit. Yes, but I'm always available on my Instagram to be.
Yeah, and we'll put that in the description for all the viewers here today, to make sure that, you know, you're getting the spelling right and everything like that. This definitely, again, like I said, has helped us maybe take a step towards proving that a traditional career is always untraditional. So, you know, thanks for listening. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is your host, Sarjit Singh.
And I'm Hemant Chapatia.
And you've been listening to Kadam, the Small Steps podcast. If you found value in this episode, please like, share, and subscribe. And as always, let us know how we can make this better.
A traditional career is always untraditional. Thanks for listening.